Pat Stafford.
Different level. I don't know the rules anymore or something's changed, but I can't believe it.
It's a 4-0 goal. Big cheer. Are you kidding me? What is that?
It's NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Crew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. We have 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. In case, you know, maybe if you send us a good comment, I'll read it on air. There's certainly a possibility of that.
You never read my tweets.
Well, your tweets are never good, so that might explain why that...
Or text, I should say.
I try to block your texts, in fact, and your tweets sometimes sneak through. You can, in fact, text us in studio if you want to, if you prefer to reach us that way. You can send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. But if your texts are good, even we might even read those ones on there. And of course, our website, it's got your latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's illegalcurve.com. Of course, Manitoba Moose winners already on this Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday evening. They played a very rare Wednesday morning game in Chicago, and I believe won by a 3-1 margin, if I'm not mistaken. So good for the Moose, pulling off the victory in Chicago, make it 2 in a row after they won, I believe it was either Saturday night or Sunday, in Iowa.
Buddy Robinson now has 7 points in 7 games. He's off to a great start. The Moose pick up another win. Eric Comrie had another fantastic performance. The bigger question that I have for you guys is, what have you been up to for the last 5 days?
Isn't it bizarre? Isn't it bizarre, Sean?
It's a weird, weird feeling.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if it's the, you know, everyone knows about the week break that's going to happen. I believe it's in January or February, whenever it is, where everyone in the Western Conference gets 5 days off and everyone in the East the next week gets that big stretch of time off. This is just very random, this sort of 5 days off that we've had since the Jets defeated the Minnesota Wild. I guess 6 days off, really, last Friday night. It's been bizarre. It's like, what's happening? It's like, you know, normally... It's sort of weird. You just consciously or subconsciously get used to every couple days, every 2 days, there's a Jets game on. Mm-hmm. There's a Jets game to look forward to. Now I'm trying to fill time in my schedule. I'm catching up on Netflix shows. I mean, what's going on? This is not how I expected to be spending time, you know, in October.
Yeah, Orange is the New Black, isn't it, Drew?
Well, it is if you're a fan of that show. I mean, I'm sure you're up to date on that. I don't know. Or Riverdale, I think, is your favorite Netflix show.
Oh, yeah. Riverdale got crazy in season 2.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
It's gotten really nuts.
Really?
Yeah, with
like
the Southside Serpents. And
are Archie and Jughead going at it? Are they in like rival gangs now or what?
No. Archie and Jughead are best friends.
Still,
but,
okay.
But there's just a lot of murder and deception. And it's crazy. But luckily,
are there sexy results as well?
Well, I don't know what that means, Drew, but...
it's a Simpsons line where everything with sexy results. So, you know, maybe there's murders on Riverdale with sexy results.
Let's move on to tomorrow's Pittsburgh Jets games, because if you keep this up, we're going to be off air.
Yeah,
so.
More or less.
We're not going to move on to Stranger Things, Stranger Things Season 2, which starts on Friday.
Yeah, I'm into that. I watched Season 1.
Oh, it's great.
I never saw that.
Got to get into it.
Really? Got to get into it?
Oh,
yeah. Well, now
very
I can't
good.
Anymore. The Jets' big hiatus is now over. I missed out on my opportunity.
Yeah, 3 games in 4 days.
Yeah, so of course, the Jets return to action tomorrow evening in Pittsburgh, and then they play Friday night in Columbus and Sunday back home to finish their season with the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, the Jets obviously practice, they've been doing really for the last few days, getting some opportunity to work on a few things. Matt Hendricks going to return to the lineup tomorrow night. A lot of people upset about Hendricks coming in and Nick Petan coming out. Do you feel the same? Do you agree with that sentiment? Do you feel the same level of passion that we've been seeing from a lot of the Twitterverse today with the news that Nick Petan was sent down to the Manitoba Moose and Matt Hendricks is returning to the Jets lineup?
Well, guys, this was inevitable, right? We knew that Matt Hendricks was going to come back to the lineup eventually. He hasn't played a regular season game yet this year for the Jets. He's only played in the preseason. And Nick Petan hasn't produced, unfortunately. He has no points so far this regular season, right? We know that bottom six scoring has been the big issue. Adam Lowry's already out of the lineup. He's going to be on the road trip this week, but he's not going to get into the lineup in Pittsburgh or Columbus. The earliest we might see him is Sunday in Winnipeg against Pittsburgh, but we know that Matthew Perreault is going to be out of the lineup for at least two or three more weeks, right? So originally he was going to be out for 4 weeks, so we'll see if that changes. But we knew that Matt Hendricks was going to come back into the lineup. So really, it was going to be between Nick Petan or Brendan Lemieux, Drew.
Well, let me ask you this. So I agree with you that for whatever reason, for better or worse, Sean, Matt Hendricks, you know, has the trust of Paul Maurice, and he was going to automatically get back into the lineup when healthy. But if your problem is in with your bottom six is scoring, and we know that they don't have a point yet in 5-on-5 play, so clearly your bottom six scoring is a problem. Does it make sense in removing probably your most skilled forward from your bottom six, albeit one who hasn't yet produced this season? Does that make logical sense? Are you going to are you going to have a better chance of getting scoring from the bottom six without the most skilled forward in the bottom six?
Well, I don't think it's just Matt Hendricks. I mean, I don't think that the Jets are saying, well, Matt Hendricks is going to come into the lineup and he's going to score two goals and he's going to be the panacea for all of our problems, right, Drew? So I think it really comes down to the role that they want Matt Hendricks to play. And it's a very different role than what Nick Petan plays. So I think they'd rather have him as the fourth line center as opposed to having Nick Petan play 7 or 8 minutes. I think that the Jets at this point, Drew, want Nick Petan to go down to the American Hockey League. He obviously didn't play this afternoon or this morning, but they want him to go down, play a top six role for the Moose, and they want him to get his confidence back. Because I think through the first 2.5, 3 weeks of the season, Nick Petan doesn't look like a confident player to me. And I'm a big fan of Nick Petan's game. As you mentioned, he's got all the skill in the world, back-to-back 100-point-plus seasons with the Portland Winterhawks in the Western Hockey League. I mean, we know that Nick Petan can be better at the NHL level, but at this point, I think they want Matt Hendricks in the lineup for what he brings on the defensive side of the game, winning faceoffs, killing penalties, providing that veteran leadership, right, Drew? So, no, I don't think that necessarily Matt Hendricks is going to come into the lineup and all of a sudden the bottom six is going to be better, but I think they want him back in the lineup, and they want Petan to get more confidence in the American Hockey League.
Yeah, I think you nailed it with one word there, as you role. And where a guy fits in his role, Nick Petan exudes skill. There's no one's going to argue that, but if you can't produce on a point basis as a point producer, then you're not fulfilling your role. Matt Hendricks will come in. Hopefully will help the penalty kill, will help maybe in that bottom six, just provide a little bit more grit and tenacity on the defensive end. And Brendan Lemieux showed that he can not excel, but he was successful in that certain role, getting the puck in, bashing bodies along the wall, hard on the forecheck. You know, if Nick Petan isn't living up to the expectations, it's disappointing that he's being sent down, but it probably is the best move for him and the team when you're assembling an effective roster.
And you got to look at, Drew, who they're playing in the next three games. Obviously, Pittsburgh twice and Columbus. We know that the Pittsburgh Penguins are a physical team. If you look at the hits leaders amongst the teams in the NHL, the Pittsburgh Penguins are right up there. We know they've added Ryan Reeves from Manitoba, obviously from the St. Louis Blues. He's a guy that plays on their fourth line. He can mix it up. So I also think Matt Hendricks is in the lineup for that physical element that he brings. And you can say that that doesn't have as much of a role in the NHL anymore, but the reality is it does. And it maybe doesn't have as much of a role as it used to. But I think, you know, when you have a guy like Matt Hendricks in the lineup, a veteran, can mix it up, can provide some stability for that fourth line. You look at what that fourth line was in practice yesterday. It was Brendan Lemieux, Matt Hendricks, and Joel Armia. And you've got some skill there. I mean, Brendan Lemieux, I keep saying this, but, you know, Brendan Lemieux did have some really good numbers in the Ontario Hockey League with Windsor. I believe he had a 40-goal season. So you're talking about Brendan Lemieux and Joel Armia, a guy that I think can be better offensively than he was last year. I think he does still have more upside than we've seen. So I do think that the secondary scoring is going to come around eventually, Drew. But so far this season, they're still looking for answers.
Well, you mentioned the lines in practice, and it's worthwhile to go through them because they have juggled a little bit, and the defense are juggled a little bit with Dmitry Kulikov regaining his health. So your top line, or whatever you want to call it, of Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, and Blake Wheeler, no surprise there. That's been the line for the last few games. It makes sense. You know, Kyle Connor, obviously a rookie in the NHL, or not really a rookie, but you know what I mean, you know, getting his first really extended playing time.
I think he is technically a rookie.
He still would be a rookie, But he's protected and insulated with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. Makes sense. Ehlers, Little, Laine, also makes sense. Don't need to delve any deeper into that. The question I have is the bottom six, the way it's sort of put together right now with Brandon Tanev, Andrew Kopp, and Sean Mathias. And then your next line of, as you said, as a Brendan Lemieux, Matt Hendricks, and Joel Armia. There's not a ton of natural offensive talent there, but I wouldn't mind seeing your most offensively talented guys there on one line. So to my mind, that's probably keeping Mathias, Kopp, and Armia together, and then maybe making that fourth line, which can be your grittier, physical checking line of Tanev, Lemieux, and Hendricks. Now, expecting a ton of offense from Armia, Kopp, and Mathias is not realistic. But right now, I don't think you're gonna expect any offense to speak of from the bottom six the way it's combined. I mean, Brandon Tanev doesn't really have that in his game, but Armia with Kopp and Mathias, they have some history of goal scoring there. I mean, Mathias is a double-digit goal scorer. Armia has been a double-digit goal scorer in the NHL, and I think Kopp got very close last year if he didn't quite reach the double digits. I don't recall off the top of my head. That's my thought, is that right now I think your bottom six is a little too jumbled as opposed to maybe trying to get as much offense from a third line there as possible.
Well, and these lines are not going to be together for very long. We know that Adam Lowry's coming back into the lineup. Eventually, Matthew Perreault will come back into the lineup.
Sure, of course.
It's not going to be for another 3 weeks, most likely, Drew, but when you're talking about Matthew Perreault being back in the lineup, then you have the ability to put him on the third line, or you can have Kyle Connor on the third line if you want to bump Perreault up, right? So I agree with you. I mean, right now, the Jets' bottom six leaves a lot to be desired, but I think, you know, when you look at, you know, some of the improvements they've made in the last couple of games, obviously the Columbus game was a stinker. The bottom six was not very good. But I think Brendan Lemieux going into the lineup, I thought he had a really good game in, you know, 8 or 9 minutes of ice time.
Look, he certainly deserves his second game in the Jets lineup
right. From
how he played in against Minnesota.
And another thing to mention, Drew, we know that Paul Maurice loves to have that blender on standby. So I wouldn't be surprised if the bottom six lines, the third and fourth lines, get changed in game against Pittsburgh, really depending on how they play.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Practice lines we've seen in the past, Paul Maurice, no hesitation in jumbling them when it comes to what's going on within a game. It's really interesting to me what Paul Maurice said yesterday. He said with regards to the bottom six, you know, go score. He challenged them. He said, go out, go score. It's there. Simpler game. Pucks to the net. Chip them in deep. So, you know, maybe that's the mentality maybe that this bottom six has to approach. Just a bit of a muckier, throw the puck in the corner, get it to the net, and just crash bodies and make the evening just a nightmare for Matt Murray, and hopefully, you know, grind in one or two the dirty way, get yourself feeling a little bit better, get the puck in the net, and then maybe things will start to, you know, steamroll moving forward. But I can't see a line of Tanev, Kopp, Mathias being held responsible for scoring, you know, multiple goals over the weekend. I mean, if they can get one, possibly two, you'd be happy with that.
On the back end, Morrissey and Trouba are together, or were together, at least at practice. Enstrom and Bufflin and Dmitry Kulikov, he's returned to health, back to being paired with Tyler Myers. Definitely looks like Ben Chiarot and Tucker Poolman are your two extra defensemen who are going to be in the press box tomorrow night against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, and, you know, Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba have actually struggled the last couple of games. We know that Dmitry Kulikov and Tyler Myers, their possession numbers have been pretty bad early on the season, but you're getting, you know, a defenseman that you signed to be a top four defenseman, right? So, I mean, unfortunately, the Jets have some injuries up front, but the good news is on defense, they're completely healthy.
Before we go to break, you know, I mentioned that good texts will be read on air. This is a good text coming to us from Neepawa, Manitoba, asking why I didn't introduce you as old Pickle Chips Ginsburg. So my apologies to the gentleman or the gentlewoman in Neepawa listening to the show alongside old Pickle Chips Ginsburg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. When we come back, Sam Werner of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette is going to join us.
The bigger question, though, is if our texters from Neepawa, do they know Shane Knighty?
Well, that's a good question. We'll see if they text back and can answer that question.
Shane's hometown.
Sam Werner of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette is up next to talk about the Penguins. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Six in the evening. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mindell, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsburg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website, with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins. Sam Werner joins us on the show. Sam, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to join you.
Sam, obviously brought you on to preview the Penguins and the Jets tomorrow evening there in Pittsburgh. Penguins, just, you know, a well-oiled machine. Sure, they had the hiccup earlier in the year in Chicago, but, you know, 6-3-1. This looks like there's no reason for this team to be anything other than a Stanley Cup contender for a third straight year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you look at the game against Edmonton, I guess last night, and that might be one of the cases where they sort of started to play the way the coaching staff really wants. And I know Edmonton's off to a slow start, to say the least, this season, but you know, the way they played defensively against Connor McDavid and company, it was something that really the coaching staff really liked, because Mike Sullivan said probably a dozen times already this season, you can't win a championship by outscoring teams. And there have been times early this season when the Penguins have tried to do that, and they can win games by doing that for sure. But I think against Edmonton, you sort of saw them starting to come around up playing the type of defensive hockey and responsible hockey that the coaching staff really likes to see.
Sam, Riley Sheahan, the newest member of the Pittsburgh Penguins, picked up an assist in yesterday's victory over the Edmonton Oilers. Did they pick up Riley because of that lack of secondary scoring that they've had early on?
I think it was a couple of things. I think they've been obviously looking for a third-line center since, you know, honestly, since Nick Bonino signed with Nashville on July 1st. And I think they've sort of been able to sort of plug along with Greg McKegg in that role for the first 10 games or first five, six games or so. But, you know, the dominoes sort of started to fall when Athanasiou worked his situation out with Detroit, and they became a little more willing to offload Sheahan, and it just sort of fell into place. Sheahan's a guy they've had their eye on for a while. I think they really like his ability to, you know, not only fill the sort of defensive roles of a third center, he led their forwards in power for penalty kill time last night. But also he's a guy where, you know, I don't think they would have felt comfortable when they have to shake things up, moving Phil Kessel down to play with Greg McKegg. I don't think that's something they would have wanted to do. But moving forward, I think, you know, Kessel used to play with Bonino a lot, and I think I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Kessel and Sheahan together at some point down the road this season, just because, like you said, you know, Sheahan, even though he's not an offensive guy primarily, he can sort of provide a little bit of offensive punch that Greg McKegg really couldn't.
Sam, a lot's being made of the job Brian Dumoulin did last night with regards to containing Connor McDavid. I know he had a goal, but still a lot of effort must have been made into, you know, playing defense against McDavid, and as well as just against a whole team with a very potent offense. You know, how were they able to stifle the Oilers' offense and limit a lot of scoring chances for that team?
Yeah, you know, I think the one thing they did a really good job at last night was keeping McDavid to the outside. When you watch his highlights, the place he can obviously do the most damage is when he gets going up the middle of the ice with a head of steam. That's when he's absolutely lethal, and that's sort of what happened on the goal. He was a little bit to the left side there, but they did a really good job of keeping him to the boards. And you look at a lot of the Oilers' scoring chances for most of the first 2.5 periods last night, and it was mostly McDavid coming up the wing and then throwing a pass across, trying to center to someone. And, you know, I think if you had the choice, you'd rather have just about anyone else on the Oilers trying to finish off a goal as opposed to Connor McDavid. And so the Penguins could live with that as McDavid sort of as the setup guy rather than the finish guy. So, yeah, I think, like I said, overall, it was a really good team defensive effort last night, especially when you consider they were coming off a 7-1 loss in Tampa on Saturday that no one was pleased with. And yeah, I think last night, obviously, you know, the Oilers have had their scoring difficulties this season, but when you have talent like that, you know, it sort of takes notice that they did a good job with that last night.
Sam Werner is our guest on NHL This Week. We're discussing the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Jets, and the Penguins tomorrow evening, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN 1290 and watch on TSN 3. Sam, the Antti Niemi backup goaltender experiment is now over. He was claimed on waivers by the Florida Panthers for, well, some reason. I'm not 100% sure. His numbers were horrific. 797 save percentage and a 7.49 goals against average. How long, I mean, obviously it's Matt Murray's crease to run with, which was always going to be the case, but is Casey DeSmith the long-term answer as the backup goalie for the Penguins, and why was it so bad with Antti Niemi?
Yeah, I mean, I think Niemi just sort of ended up being the worst case scenario when they signed him, which was that, you know, his numbers and his performance in Dallas last year was not an aberration, but rather just the goalie that he is at this stage in his career. I think the Penguins and Jim Rutherford were banking on the fact that moving him to a better team would improve his numbers. And, you know, to be fair to Niemi, I think that there is something to be said for the fact that the three games he started were the second half of back-to-backs, and the Penguins were not particularly good at any of them. But that being said, you can't allow seven goals against Tampa, you know, even if you're playing your fifth game in 5 days. It doesn't matter if you're trying to win the Stanley Cup. That just won't do. So, yeah, you know, moving forward, I talked to Jim Rutherford about this on Monday, and he said it's going to be sort of a fluid situation, a week-by-week thing. I think they're fine with DeSmith now. I wouldn't be surprised if he got a start. They have a back-to-back coming up this weekend in Minnesota and Winnipeg, actually. I wouldn't be surprised if DeSmith got one of those games this weekend, just to sort of see what they have in him. But I honestly think the Penguins are probably a little surprised that Niemi got Klavan, too. I think they thought he might be an option moving forward for them. So that might sort of throw a wrench into the plans, and maybe they do move to get another veteran backup at this point. But for now, I think they're happy with DeSmith as the backup. And you know, if they end up making a move short-term, it could just be to send DeSmith back to Wilkes-Barre and bring up Tristan Jarry, you know, who does have an NHL game under his belt, at least to be Murray's backup for a little bit. I think maybe a veteran goaltender down the road, but nothing pressing at this point, I don't sense.
Sam, we're a Winnipeg-based hockey show, so we have to ask you about Ryan Reeves, who's obviously from Winnipeg. How's the big man fit in Steeltown?
Well, I think personality-wise, he's been great. You know, he immediately, from a reporter's perspective, he joins the short list of guys in that Penguins room who are great to talk to, and you know, a good quote in the locker room. But you know, I think it's sort of a work in progress as far as how he's fitting in on the ice. Obviously, he gets in the fight last night, picks up an assist on Ian Cole's goal as well. You know, he went through a little bit of a rough patch a few games ago where he was only playing about 3 minutes a night, thanks largely to a lot of special teams in those games. I think moving forward, the one thing I'm interested to see with Reeves is in the preseason, there was a lot of talk about working him in on the penalty kill, and we really haven't seen that so much in the regular season at all. And so I think that's going to be sort of key to figuring out his long-term viability and fit with the Penguins. Is that's really an area where if they can work him in there, that goes a long, long way towards making him a more valuable asset than just sort of the fourth line grinder and, you know, guy who can drop the gloves every once in a while that he is right now.
Sam, looking ahead to the game versus the Jets, tons of skill on both rosters, but you know, last year there was a lot of nastiness between these two teams. I think of Tom Cestito, Toby Enstrom. I think of the Malkin Wheeler incident. You know, do we just kind of forget about all that in the past and move forward, brand new season, lots of skilled guys, or do you expect a little bit of that to carry over and there to be a little bit of nastiness tomorrow in the next game?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think especially now that a guy like Reeves is on the roster, you know, that's sort of what he's there for. So I think if there is any sort of edge to start, he's the sort of guy who won't be afraid to get in and mix it up, especially, you know, I know from the Jets side of things, a lot of it is directed at getting Malkin for the Wheeler hit. And you know, I wouldn't be surprised. I remember that game. I was out there in March of last year when things sort of went a little haywire. I don't think we'll have Tom Cestito up for this one, but, you know, Reeves could certainly get in the mix too. And, yeah, I mean, I don't think that's the kind of thing guys forget, especially with sort of how crazy that game up in Winnipeg was last year.
Sam, yesterday you reported that Justin Schultz was diagnosed with a concussion after Tuesday's game against the Oilers. Is there any further update? I'm assuming he's not playing tomorrow night versus the Jets.
Yeah, he wasn't at practice today, so I that pretty much rules him out for tomorrow night. And, you know, with these concussions, it's really a day-by-day thing. But I would at least put him out for this game. And then, you know, the big question coming up this weekend is if he'll take the road trip to Minnesota and Winnipeg. And honestly, you know, if he picked up the concussion on Tuesday night, I'd be surprised if he were able to turn around and play this weekend. So I think it's pretty safe to rule him out at least, you know, for the next 2-3 games or so. You know, it's bad news for the Penguins. I think the thing they're looking for is maybe they can get Matt Hunwick back from a concussion at some point over the next couple of games to sort of shore things up defensively. Otherwise, they're looking at a defensive unit playing two men down.
Sam, we'll let you go on this last question. I mean, winning back-to-back cups is obviously a tremendously impressive accomplishment, and it's so rare nowadays in the NHL for a team to do that. And I sort of started off the interview by mentioning that the Penguins look like a well-oiled machine. They look like they haven't skipped a beat, and they look like they're still going to be in the running at the end of the regular season entering into the playoffs. How does Mike Sullivan keep this team motivated to the level that they have been? I mean, we've seen some teams like the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, sort of coast through the regular season and then turn it on later towards the start of the playoffs. How is Mike Sullivan keeping this team's interest so that they're right atop the Metropolitan Division and they look like they don't want to, you know, they want to be the champs going forward and they don't want to have to turn it on later on in the year?
Well, I think the key for them, for the Penguins, is that, you know, obviously anything like this, it starts at the top with 87 and Sidney Crosby. And I think the one thing that the Penguins have in their advantage is the guys at the top there just have a lot of personal pride on a nightly basis where, you know, it'd be pretty easy for them to say, who cares about the regular season? We'll turn it on in the playoffs. And, you know, we've won two cups in a row. So what does it matter what we do in October? But, you know, you get the sense coming out of a couple of games recently, especially the embarrassing losses, the 7-1 in Tampa and the 10-1 in Chicago, that those losses alone really eat at those guys at the top of the roster in the locker room. And I think that's something that Mike Sullivan has at his advantage to sort of motivate this team, is that there's a lot of personal pride for these guys on a nightly basis because they know the expectations that they have, and they know that the target is on their back, quite frankly. And so I think they know how much teams enjoy beating them, and they want to try and prevent that as much as possible. So, you know, I remember talking to Ian Cole before the season about this, and he said something to the line of, like, do we think that we're just going to drop the puck because we've won the last two, not care? And, you know, no, we want to go out and win a third, and this is a new team. We've got new guys in the locker room, and, you know, we've started the season the last 2 years, and we know sort of what it's like to go through it, but it doesn't make us want to win any less on a night-to-night basis just because we threw a parade the last 2 years. And so I think that's the sort of thing that can keep this team going, you know, even though they have reached the mountaintop and have all the pieces to probably, you know, do it again if the things fall the right way.
By the way, Sam, has Sidney Crosby decided that he wants to spend more time in the penalty box? Because in 10 games, he's already got more penalty minutes than he had all of last year.
I joked last season that I've really enjoyed how Sid has sort of taken the heel turn to being the villain in the NHL these days, it seems like. But I feel like even he might have taken it a little bit too far this season with the number of penalties he's taken. So he's been a little bit better the last couple of games, and so I expect we'll see that drop. But it's certainly been, I don't want to say amusing, but interesting to watch over these first couple games.
The Jets and the Penguins will do battle tomorrow evening and Sunday evening. Sam Werner covers the Penguins for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Sam, appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys.
When we come back, we discuss more on the Jets and the Penguins. Get you ready for tomorrow night's game. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Sam Werner for joining us to talk about the Penguins. It's going to be fun to see the Penguins twice in the next 3 games, Thursday night and Sunday night, with a return trip to Columbus, Ohio, to visit the Blue Jackets on Friday. A very difficult stretch for the Winnipeg Jets over the next 3 games, certainly. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Sean, you were telling us off air about an incident in your rec league game last night where somebody may have gotten a little bit of a love tap to the jaw. So I hope that individual was wearing their mouth guard from Linden Market Dental Center. Otherwise, it would have been a little bit...
They didn't become an Ezzy.
They didn't become an Ezzy. That's always important.
Shawnee, there was a kerfuffle?
Yeah, a little skirmish. Tempers flared on a Tuesday night skate, but that's hockey, right?
Well, I mean, the scouts that were in attendance, multiple.
Yeah, only a few NHL
pro
contracts
scouts
were
in attendance last night.
How about that Kevin Bieksa Superman punch from last night?
That's crazy.
That was a little ridiculous, I got to say. I mean, whatever. I mean,
that was Roman Reigns style.
Is
in a society now where headshots and, you know, is fighting welcome and, you know, should we abolish it? that punch got a lot of plays on social media and Twitter. So,
well, I mean, I don't want to get into the whole fighting conversation because it's been talked about ad nauseum.
It was a crazy punch.
I don't think you're going to see the Superman punch become a frequent.
He's pulled that before. He pulled it on Mike Richards when he was on Vancouver.
Well, I mean, if you can pull that off, I guess all the power to you.
And Radko Gudas is a tough SOB.
Boy.
He is. He's not, I mean, Radko Gudas is certainly known as probably plays on the dirty side of the game. And so I wonder if there's any history. I didn't have a chance to look back if there's any history between Bieksa and Gudas.
And Bieksa's not Mr. Nice Guy either.
No,
I mean, he'll give you
not.
A cross check in front of the net as well.
Well, I mean, yeah, cross check is one thing. I've yet to see a flying cross check.
Just to have the gusto to try that.
Like stick the landing.
If he slips.
Yeah, if you don't stick the landing.
You're getting knocked out.
I don't like it, by the way. I mean, you know me, Drew. I mean, I appreciate a good fight.
You do like the fisticuffs.
But I like a old school Domi versus Probert. I don't really like this, you know, flying punch business.
New age fighting.
Keep MMA out of it. I mean, there's a certain code here. I mean, fighting is on the decline. We know that. It might eventually be, I hate to say it, fighting might not exist in the NHL in 3 or 4 years. But that type of stuff, I mean, you can't do that.
I just don't know how you stick that landing. I mean, you know, it's hard enough. You know,
well, forget
I
guess the landing,
balance, we'll
Drew,
never
I mean,
know.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Unless you're an NHL player, I think you know how to, you know, figure skate land like that.
I mean, what's next? Is Kevin Bieksa going to put someone in the cross-face chicken wing?
I don't know.
That'd be amazing.
That would be probably a little bit.
What's the top turnbuckle in an NHL rink?
I don't even know. Maybe like jumping off of the top of the goalie net or something. You know, something like that, maybe. I'm not sure. Anyways, I don't think we're going to see any sort of cross-promotion between the WWE and the NHL anytime soon. But speaking of fisticuffs, the last time the Jets and the Penguins met, there certainly was a lot of fisticuffs. And so the question for you guys, we all remember, you know, the Malkin Wheeler game. That was a, you know, that was a good hockey game. That Jets, the Jets Penguins game that was in Pittsburgh last year.
They usually are good games.
Was a damn good game. And then they had the rematch in Winnipeg where it was a good first period, if I recall correctly. And then the Penguins took over after that. And Tom Sestito ended Toby Enstrom's season last year with a horrendously dirty hit. And Tom Sestito, as Sam Werner mentioned, obviously isn't going to be making a return appearance for the game.
He should have been suspended for 20 games
for that. Absolutely. The suspension was a joke.
Yep.
And I think whatever it was, I mean,
well, he's not in the NHL anymore.
Because there's no role for him in the NHL. He shouldn't have been in the NHL when that game happened. Do you think there's any lingering resentment? Do you think the guys remember that game? I know it's been a whole offseason. I know the Penguins have hoisted the cup. Do you think in the Jets, I don't think it'll be so much in the Penguins dressing room, but in the Jets dressing room, do you think that there's some hard feelings?
Well, Sean was at practice today, and you know, when you talk about Toby Enstrom and you know that incident, Toby Enstrom said that there wasn't any lingering resentment from that hit. Obviously, he's not going to say if there is, but let's be honest here, guys. The main point is this is going to be a physical game because the Pittsburgh Penguins are a physical team. Actually, the Jets aren't as physical as they used to be, especially without a guy like Adam Lowry in the lineup. Mm-hmm. But you're going to see guys like Dustin Byfuglien throw their weight around. Brandon Tanev, even though he's smaller, he's going to throw his weight around.
Brendan Lemieux.
Exactly, Brendan Lemieux, and we know how good Lemieux's play in Pittsburgh, right? So when you're talking about, you know, lingering resentment, you know, Drew, I do think there is a little bit of it, but I think at the end of the day, they're focusing on winning the game, right?
Sure.
But it's inevitable when you have Ryan Reeves in the lineup. Matt Hendricks is a guy. He's not afraid to drop the gloves. He's a physical player. So the Jets do have physical players up and down the lineup, but I don't think you're going to see any type of retribution. Blake Wheeler versus Evgeny Malkin, they already dropped the gloves.
Yeah,
that happened last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they settled their business on the ice. But at the end of the day, I mean, you will see some incidents. I just don't think it's going to have anything to do with last year.
Penguins have the fifth most hits in the league so far this year with 225. Conversely, the Jets have the third fewest hits in the league this year with 138. So certainly a factor of that is the absence of a guy like Adam Lowry in the lineup.
Well, and the absence of Chris Thorburn.
And certainly Chris Thorburn. I mean, if Thorburn was good for anything last year, it certainly was throwing the body. I don't mean that as an insulting matter. It came out way harsher than I intended right there. But
I'm going to tell Thorbs you said that, Drew.
Please don't. He might be able to stick that flying Superman punch and hit me. You know, the alpha dogs, you mentioned as you don't think there's going to be any lingering resentment. If I'm Blake Wheeler, though, and I consider myself one of the top right wingers in the league, as he should, you know, just from the alpha dog matchup, you know, Wheeler and Malkin, you know, we saw the interactions last year in both games. I don't think that when alpha dogs go at it like that, I don't think it just ends. I think that they're always remember that you know, I want to, you know, that this guy's a benchmark for me, even though they play different positions and everything else. But, you know, Wheeler considers himself an alpha dog in the NHL, and he probably feels that Malkin as an alpha dog in the NHL disrespected me or got the better of me in some regards. So I think this is Wheeler's first opportunity to maybe come back and regain some of this alpha dog pride, if you want me to continue to torture this analogy.
Well, I think that happened, though, in Winnipeg, and I think we saw that when they fought. And right. Evgeny Malkin and Blake Wheeler aren't guys that you expect to fight very often. I'm not saying, Drew, that Wheeler and Malkin aren't going to go toe-to-toe if they're playing against each other on a line. I mean, these are competitive guys. We know how competitive Blake Wheeler is.
Yeah.
We know how competitive Evgeny Malkin is. So if they happen to be on the ice at the same time, yeah, they might try to body check each other, but I don't think, you know, these two players are going to drop the gloves
again. No. I'm differentiating between, sorry, and I should have made myself more clear. I'm differentiating between settling a score, which I think they did last year when they fought in Winnipeg, and just using each other as a benchmark. That, I think.
Well, sure, because Evgeny Malkin, multiple Stanley Cup champion, but a top center in the NHL. Blake Wheeler's a top right winger in the NHL. You're right. I mean, it's a good point. I mean, these guys want to win, and that's what's going to be so great about tomorrow night's game and then Sunday's game at Bell MTS Place. The Pittsburgh Penguins are the benchmark team for all other teams until someone else wins the Stanley Cup. They're the Stanley Cup champions, right? So I think we're in for a great game tomorrow night and a great game on Sunday, because as Sean mentioned, every time the Jets and Pens play two skilled, fast teams, they seem to bring the best out of each other.
Well, I think it'll be interesting. The Jets and Thrashers organization have had no success whatsoever in Pittsburgh. So
not many teams have.
Not many teams have, admittedly. But I mean, it's gone to the point of being somewhat comical how little success they've had in Pittsburgh.
Well, so, and if you're, you know, just to get in here, Drew, I'll let Sean get in here. But when you're talking about, you know, these next three or four games, so you're talking about two against Pittsburgh, one home, one on the road, and then the game against Columbus on Friday night, and then against Minnesota on the road as well. I mean, these are four crucial games, because the schedule starts to get a little bit easier as you get into November, right? You've got the Coyotes a couple times. You've got the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm joking there. They're 7-1.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about the schedule, I mean, it is going to get easier. So if you're able to pick up maybe three out of four wins here, I mean, you can set yourself up nicely here in November.
Well, you're 4-3 right now, Sean. And you, like, as you said, your next four games are all against playoff opponents. The Wild, admittedly a banged up playoff opponent, but the Blue Jackets, who we've already seen this year and who came into Winnipeg and really laid a whooping on the team, and the Penguins, the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. What's a good record in the next three or four games against these playoff teams that you're facing? You know, do the Jets need to get, you know, half the points available? Do they need four out of the next 8 points? And, you know, if that was to happen, they'd finish the month of October above 500. They'd be able to, you know, say that they got through a very difficult month of October and are still right in the thick of things. Or, you know, is one win in the next three or four sufficient? You know, where do they need to be after the next four games to say, okay, we survived October?
Yeah, just looking at it, first of all, what a challenging weekend. I mean, you haven't played in, what, almost six full days?
Yeah.
And then you're going through a meat grinder on the road, Pittsburgh, Columbus, back to Winnipeg, Pittsburgh, and then in Minnesota on Tuesday. If you can squeak out, I'm going to say 4 points over the weekend, so 4 points over those three games, maybe five over the four-game period between Tuesday, I think you're pretty happy with that performance, considering who you're playing, especially with a Central Division rivalry in between the mix there. I'd say you're pretty happy with that.
Yeah, Sean, I would have to agree with that. I think you want to get at least 4 or 5 points out of 8 points, right?
Yeah.
Because it's going to be really tough to get all 4 points on the road back-to-back against Pittsburgh and Columbus. And obviously, they have the home ice advantage coming back on the weekend against Pittsburgh. And then Minnesota's obviously a team that the Jets have recently played, right, and had success against. So, I mean, I think it's possible here for the Jets to get 5 or 6 points out of these next four games. And as we said, the schedule does get easier, and it's kind of been, you know, that weird schedule where the Minnesota Wild are the only Central Division team that the Jets have played so far. You have a lot more Central Division games coming up later in November, but you know, it's a big test for them, and they have no excuses because they've had the last 5 days off, and they always seem to raise their game against Pittsburgh, and that is what I think is an encouraging sign. We always see the Jets perform really well against the Penguins, and, you know, right now the Penguins are allowing four goals goals a game, which is incredible. And that's one of the reasons why Antti Niemi was placed on waivers. They just had enough of it, right?
Sure.
And Matt Murray has struggled as well. Obviously, we expect Matt Murray, you know, to improve as the season goes along. But you know, we know that the Jets are scoring at a nice clip here. So, you know, it's there's a very good opportunity here to make up some points.
It'll be interesting. It all starts tomorrow
night. It's not going to be easy, though.
It won't be easy. Certainly won't be easy against the Penguins and the Blue Jackets. And that's, of course, Thursday and Friday, and then home to the Penguins on Sunday. It all gets started tomorrow evening with the Jets in Pittsburgh to meet the Penguins, a game you can hear on TSN 1290. Watch on TSN 3. When we come back, we discuss, should Canadian junior teams, so the Canadian Hockey League teams, should they release some of their players to play in the upcoming Olympics for Team Canada? That's coming up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the hour, you're listening to NHL This Week. It's the Wednesday edition of Illegal Curve Radio here on TSN 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, when the puck drops and you're looking for a place to watch the game, Bernstein's Deli is your destination. Hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Join them there tomorrow evening when the Jets and the Penguins do battle, and again Friday night for the Jets and the Blue Jackets. Ezzy, an interesting article, an interesting topic brought forward regarding the use of Canadian Hockey League players, junior-aged players, at the 2018 Olympic Games in South Korea. We know the Olympics are rapidly approaching. I think they're about 100 days away, something like that. I think I saw the torch rally, or the torch got lit in Athens, Greece, and it'll be making its way to South Korea over the next little while. And we know the NHL players, much to the chagrin of basically everybody except for the NHL owners, will not be participating in the 2018 Olympics. So we know that, you know, the powers that be, the Tom Rennies in Canada and the, you know, his equivalent in the U.S., have been scouring the hockey world to try and find players that can represent Canada at the upcoming Olympics. A lot of those players, I think the predominance of those players are going to come from the KHL, come from players who are playing overseas in Europe.
Yeah, the Swiss League, Swedish League.
Finnish League, whatever it might be. But there's been some talk and some dispute about whether Canadian Junior Hockey League players, CHL players, will be allowed to join Team Canada if asked as well. Right now, it seems like the answer that most of those owners, the CHL owners, are leaning towards is no. They would not let their players go play for Team Canada at the upcoming Olympics. Your thought on that dilemma, and how and what should be the answer if a Canadian Hockey League player is asked to represent Team Canada?
Yeah, and we should mention the CHL owners have not publicly said no or formally said no yet, but it looks like that. They haven't said yes.
Correct.
Either, right? So, I mean, I have no problem with it. Why not? I mean, you want to see some good players playing at the Olympics. The majority of players that make up Team Canada, Team USA, the other teams, are not going to be junior age players. And we know in the Continental Hockey League, you have a couple players by the name of Pavel Datsyuk and Ilya Kovalchuk who are most likely going to play for Russia at the Olympics. So we know that the Russians, for example, are going to stock up on guys playing in the Continental Hockey League, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about, as you mentioned, not being able to take players on NHL contracts, you can take players obviously on AHL contracts, but when you're talking about some of these junior players, we know that there are junior age players that are already in the NHL that aren't going to be available, right? So you're talking about first overall pick Nico Hischier. You're talking about Nolan Patrick. He's going to stay with the Philadelphia Flyers. I'd be shocked if he doesn't stay with the Philadelphia Flyers. Mm-hmm. He'd be an interesting one. He'd go back to the Brandon Wheat Kings, obviously. Jordan Kyrou is a guy whose name has been bandied about, a guy that Sean Burke would really like to have in the Olympics. We don't know if he's going to be available, but this idea of having the ability to use junior age players in South Korea for the Olympics is an idea that I think is a great one, because we know that Sean Burke has said that he'd like to have a young line, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to call it the kid line or whatever. So a guy like Jordan Kyrou, he's averaging 2 points a game right now for the Sarnia Sting. He's a St. Louis Blues draft pick. So I think Canada would love to have a guy like Jordan Kyrou, or if Nolan Patrick would happen to be available. I don't think he will be. But the point is that I think they would love to have an infusion of young talent, because we know that, you know, for the most part, the other players that are going to play for Team Canada are going to be guys in their late 20s, early 30s, right? Ben Scrivens,
yes,
is going to be the goaltender.
Guys who were NHLers are no longer NHLers and have continued their hockey career over, you know, in the KHL. Nigel Dawes of,
yep,
Winnipeg, currently, I think, either leading or top five in the KHL in points. So he's a guy who's on the radar, of course, of Team Canada for the upcoming Olympics. It's worth noting, Sean, and I'll get your opinion on the matter, that any international player, so any player that's, you know, from Russia or any player from Europe that is playing in the Canadian Hockey League, if that team, if that country's federation requests that player be eligible for the Olympics, that player must be released by the CHL team.
Really?
Yeah. So there is that sort of an interesting wrinkle. If you're a Russian player and you're playing for Halifax, and Team Russia says, we want you to play in the Olympics, the Halifax Mooseheads must release that player to go play in the Olympics.
But that doesn't apply to Hockey Canada?
Correct, because okay, it has to do with international agreements.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring up the Halifax Mooseheads, obviously the team that Nikolai Ehlers used to play for. One of the top draft-eligible prospects for the 2018 draft, Filip Zadina, is currently averaging 2 points a game. So you wonder if maybe the Czech Republic would love to have a guy like Filip Zadina play for them.
Well, especially a Czech Republic that has seen a downturn in their hockey program as of late. You know, a guy like Zadina might be one of their, might be a reasonable candidate to make their Team Czech Republic at the upcoming Olympics. So it is, you know, it is a bit of a double standard in that maybe the Canadian players won't be permitted to go, but that the European players are going, have to be allowed to go per international agreements.
Yeah, and I can see where they, I can see where the CHL and the respective junior clubs have an issue with this, because one of the main concerns just reading the article was that if they are to lose whichever players they would lose for the Olympics, they would probably also lose for the World Junior, and it's a matter of how much can your hockey team afford to lose potentially their best player on their roster. And so when you're a CHL player, and a GM and an owner, you also have to assess that and risk for injury. These are younger guys going up against guys who have been playing pro for probably over 6-7 years, let's
sure
say.
Yeah, you're playing against
and
men.
And you're playing against men on the highest form of competition in the Olympics. And I just always think back to the Islanders with John Tavares. And I know you can't really go forward risking injury, like thinking about risking injury and assessing it based on that. But I just, is it worth the risk for a junior team who's vying for a championship to send one of their skilled guys to maybe get 4 or 5 minutes a game, 6 minutes a game potentially?
Well, Ezzy, I mean, can you, you mentioned Jordan Kyrou before, because that's the name that Elliot Friedman used in his article.
Yep.
Kyrou of the Sarnia Sting. If you find out that Team Canada really badly wants you to go play in the Olympics, and your management and your ownership of the Sarnia Sting say, no, you can't go play,
you're pissed.
Can you imagine how upset you would be? This is a guy who, I mean, Kyrou's already been drafted. He's been drafted by the Blues. I'd be tempted. I know, and I know it's you know, you would never see it. You so rarely see it happen. I'd be tempted to tell the Sarnia Sting, you know, go stick it. You know, I'm going to go play for Team Canada. I don't care what you think. I mean, my career is likely done here anyways. I don't have anything else after the season. I'm probably either going to be in the NHL or in the AHL at that point in time. But, you know, I want to go, and I'm going to go, and I'll come back if you let me go, and I'll play for your Sarnia Sting, and we'll be, you know, CHL contenders. But if you don't let me go, I'm going to go anyways, and do your worst to me.
Another guy to throw out there, too, is Cody Glass, who was drafted by the Vegas Golden Knights, currently
sure
playing for the Portland Winterhawks, right? I mean, you can't just let one guy play. You have to let everyone play, right? Logan Brown just sent back to the Windsor
right
Spitfires,
but
so you would have to let the U.S. have the ability to take Logan Brown, for example.
And they're having the same sort of dilemma when it comes to NCAA players in the U.S. as well, you know, and less of an extent than Team Canada, of course, but you know, if I'm a junior player and I've already been drafted, because you're only talking about guys who have already been drafted for the most part, they're not going to take a 17-year-old. they're going to take, they want to take 19-year-olds or 20-year-olds. My junior career is winding down. I really hesitate to be the junior hockey team that stands in the roadblock ahead of you saying, no, you can't go represent your country.
And Drew, at the end of the day, guys, I mean, you're talking about maybe a few players, right? Like, we talked about, you know, the majority of the players that are going to make up Team Canada and Team USA are going to come from the European leagues, right? Mm-hmm. You mentioned Nigel Dawes. You're talking about guys like Rob Klinkhammer. You're talking about Mason Raymond. We saw Max Talbot already represent Canada. He's a guy. Corey Emerton. Players like this, right? Guys in their late 20s, early 30s. Those are going to be the players. Jacob McFlicker, we should mention, obviously a good Winnipegger we've had on the show many times. It's going to be players like that who make up the majority of the roster. So if junior players are able to go and play in South Korea, we're not talking about a lot of players. I don't know if this is going to happen, by the way. I'm leaning towards this not happening.
Like you, but
I would love to see it. I mean, I would love to see Cody Glass or Jordan Kyrou represent Canada at the Olympics, but I don't think that the CHL owners want it.
I don't think they want it either, and that's, I think, is a shame. And I think if I'm a player, especially one who's pretty much at the end of their junior eligibility, I would challenge that. And I know the hockey community is a tight-knit one, and that player might get blackballed as a result. Mm-hmm. But if you're a good enough player, you know, they always find room for skill at the same time. So, yeah, if you want to challenge the status quo, you might ruffle some feathers. But at the same time, the St. Louis Blues aren't going to, you know, drop Jordan Kyrou off their roster just because he told the Sarnia Sting that I'm an independent thinker and I want to go play for Team Canada when given the opportunity.
Right, and I just don't think at the end of the day, guys, these junior owners want their players to go play in the World Junior Hockey Championship and then go play in the Olympics in February, right? I mean, at the end of the day, the junior team owners want their players to play for them and help them, you know, during the regular season and getting into the playoffs, right? So I think right now, even though I think you'd love to see some of these younger players play in the Olympics, we just don't know if it's going to happen at this point. It might still happen, but right now it's just not there.
When we come back, Sean Tierney of Hockey Graphs and The Athletic joins us. Talk about shot rates, share of expected goals, and 5-versus-5 shot rates as it pertains to your Winnipeg Jets. Hour number 2 of NHL This Week coming up next. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number 2 of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com and Hockey Graphs, we're pleased to welcome to the program Sean Tierney. Sean, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Sean. Appreciate you making time for us. Obviously, brought you on, talk a little bit about the Winnipeg Jets and the game of hockey from a bit of an analytical point of view. You know, first question I wanted to ask you about is sort of the concept of expected goal rates. And can you sort of explain the concept for our audience and how it applies to the Winnipeg Jets?
Sure. So the big picture is we're lucky that we have websites like Korsica.hockey and different places where, you know, they really dig into the numbers underlying how teams play. So the idea with expected goals is when a player takes a shot, we can calculate what the likelihood of that shot going in is depending on where they've taken the shot from. We know shooting percentages from different zones in the offensive zone. And so when a team is generating lots of high-quality chances close into the net, we know that they have high expected goals for. If a team is lobbing long balls in sort of from the point, kind of like what we used to see with the Los Angeles Kings maybe more last year, their expected goals for will be a little bit lower. We can calculate that same number against the team as well, what kind of shots and what kind of shot quality are they giving up in their own end as well. And so using that sort of that kind of metric, we get a better sense than just the pure shot rates where you count, you know, how many shots has the team taken, how many have they allowed. With this way, we get a weighting sort of based on just how dangerous those shots are. And so expected goals has kind of become a really key advanced stats for people that are you know, looking into that kind of field, it's a number that really gives us a lot of true sense of how a team's performing. In terms of the Jets, it's kind of a funny story for them this year. Around the league, they're definitely seen as a high-skilled team, a team with some really great shooters, some really huge offensive talent. But the expected goal rates for the team are really super low this year. So I was just sort of looking through a couple of the graphs, and I'll tweet them out afterwards. Winnipeg has the second lowest expected goals for rate at 5-on-5 play. The only team that's generating less is Buffalo right now, and that's definitely not company you want to keep offensively in the NHL right now, and especially not when you have the kind of top six that the Winnipeg Jets have.
Sean, you mentioned team shot rates earlier. Can you explain how those are calculated and, again, how that applies to the Winnipeg Jets early on this season?
Sure. So the shot rates is kind of a more general view, a little bit less specific than the expected goals. We know that teams that tend to generate more shot attempts than their opponents, those teams tend to score more goals, and, you know, because of that, they tend to win more often. So we like looking at the number of shot attempts a team has generated and the number of shot attempts they've given up, Corsi for, Corsi against, and we look at it as a rate stat. So, you know, how much are they giving up per 60 minutes of play at even strength? For the Jets this year, again, it's a very strange story. We know we're looking at a team that's got huge offensive talent sort of throughout the lineup. But for whatever reason, Coach Maurice seems to have the team playing this very passive or defensive style. So the Jets, in terms of their own shot generation, they're about even with the Minnesota Wild, and then only the Canucks and the Sabres are generating less shot attempts per 60 minutes. So they're right at the very bottom of the league. For a team that has as much skill as they have, you really want to be pushing the pace and getting a lot of pucks on goal. And, you know, they're right at the bottom of the league right now. So it's not a recipe for success in general, and especially for a team that has the kind of offensive guns that the Jets do. In terms of the shots that they're allowing against, they're about league average right now, a little bit over league average. You know, that's an okay place to be if you're generating your own shots going the other way. But the Jets right now are just, they're generating almost nothing at all, and it's a real waste of the talent that they have.
Sean, how does this compare with, say, last year's Winnipeg Jets? The forward group is very similar. I mean, Kyle Connor has been up now and playing maybe a bigger role than he did last season. So how do these, you know, expected goal rates and the team shot rates for the Jets compare to last year's Winnipeg Jets?
It's worse. It's definitely worse, which is part of the reason why going into the off season and some of the work that was done in the summer, there were some really strong projections for the Jets suggesting that, you know, looking at the lineup that they had and the kind of shot rates and expected goals that the players, you know, were generating last year, and like you said, returning in a lot of ways a very similar lineup, the projections were strong if you sort of went across from model to model looking at what we could expect from the Jets this year. But the real difference, and it's a little bit difficult to explain why the coaching staff has thought that slowing this team back in the way that they've slowed them down was the way they wanted to go forward, but you know, the results are very mixed so far, and you know, if the Jets really want to capitalize this season going forward, they're really going to have to dial up the pace and look to generate more chances and get back to doing a little bit more what they did last year.
Sean Tierney is our guest on NHL This Week. You can follow him on Twitter at Charting Hockey. You can also read his work at HockeyGraphsAndTheAthletic.com.
Sean, what's the difference between a high-event team versus a low-event team, and which category do you see the Winnipeg Jets falling into?
Yeah, so I tweet out some graphs showing a really, really crude version of pace, so sort of a high-event or a low-event team. What I'm taking is their shot rate for and their shot rate against, and I'm jamming those two numbers together, and I'm calling it pace. And so what that tells us is, when that team's playing, do we expect to see a lot of shot attempts going on? Do we expect to see very few or league average? Now, it's difficult to say should a team be high event or low event. That kind of depends on the skill level of the team. But this season so far, the Penguins, the Oilers, the Blackhawks, they've been very high event. They're generating a lot of chances themselves, and they're giving up the chances going the other way. The Canucks and the Sabres are the polar opposite. They're not getting much going on their own, and they're not letting the other team take very many chances either. The Jets, in terms of their pace, are right at the bottom of the league. They're ranked sixth lowest in terms of overall pace, and that's partly their own the shots that they're allowing against, but it's mostly that they're not generating any chances for. And so that's a really big problem, again, sort of as we said, that for a team with this kind of offense, they shouldn't be looking to play slow. Instead, you want your top six, when you've got guys like Wheeler and Shifley and all the names that they can turn loose, you need those guys getting their opportunities to score and playing a high-paced, high-event game. Right now, they're not. They're playing something much, much slower, and it just doesn't fit the roster, the personnel that they have.
You know, Sean, taking this further, I saw on Twitter that you recently posted a chart of forwards 5-on-5 and their point rates versus their time-on-ice percentage to uncover who is the most productive and least productive. What did you find, and were you surprised by kind of what the numbers told you?
I was a little surprised, and so these are charts that you can dig into yourself. I'll put the links. And so what I'm trying to show is when you look at these charts, you can follow along the time on ice that the players are playing on the sort of from left to right. And what we expect to see is as you go from left to right, you're going from less time to more time on ice. So naturally, we'd expect that as you move towards the higher time on ice players, you'd expect the points per 60 to go up. And so you would expect to see a coach is using his most effective players most often. So the best example right now for defensemen is Erik Karlsson's in the top right corner of this chart. He's playing all the time, and he's scoring all the time. And so that's evidence of using a player wisely. In the very bottom left of the chart, where you have low time on ice and low production, that's where we see most of our fourth line grinders. And that makes sense, right? We expect these players to go out. Their job isn't necessarily to score. They don't play a lot. And so we expect to see those guys there. The interesting quadrants on this graph are the top left and the bottom right. If your time on ice is low, but your points per 60 are high, well, then you would wonder why the coach isn't using you a little bit more often. And that's the top left. In the bottom right, your time on ice is high, but your points per 60 is low. And that means that the coach is probably riding you a little bit too hard, and you're really not justifying your ice time. Now, for the Jets, it's a really good news story, and I was a little surprised digging into it. Right now, the forward group, the top six, they all have above league average time on ice, no surprise, and above league average points per 60. So the top six is doing what they can to score while they're on ice. It's not necessarily because they're getting a lot of attempts, but they are capitalizing on the attempts that they are throwing at the net. So Ehlers, Wheeler, Shifley, Lane, Little, Perreault all check in the top right quadrant as productive players. That's a really good sign. For the defensemen, we get kind of a similar story where the time on ice seems to be divvied up properly. Enstrom doesn't score a lot, but he doesn't rate high in time on ice percentage as part of the top six right now anyway. Bufflin's in the top right corner, not quite in Carlson's range, but not far off either, which is a good sign. Troob is not far behind there too. Josh Morrissey has proven to be about league average in time on ice and point rate, which is, all you would hope for from Morrissey so far. Maybe the one thing that stands out interestingly is Kulikov comes in as a majorly underused player so far. And that's probably just that we're looking at a small sample because he hasn't been a high point rate guy in the past. But so far, from the little sample that we were able to get from him, his time on ice could be dialed up a little bit because he was doing well with the time that he had.
Sean, you mentioned that the Jets' best players are performing the best in terms of the quadrants that they should be in and things of that nature. Yet they're being sort of throttled back based on how Paul Maurice is sort of deploying the team. If they were to be given free rein, does it make sense and is it fair to extrapolate that these guys would even be performing at a higher rate than they currently are?
Yeah, and I mean, it's almost hard to go up from where they are, which is funny to say. So the reason why you'd want to turn these guys a little bit more loose is that as a team, the Jets are riding a little bit of an inflated shooting percentage, and that's how these guys have managed to be productive without generating a lot of chances leading to those goals. And so the worry is if they keep playing this slow, we're going to see that top six drift back and the production will dry up when the shooting percentages aren't there. And over time, we expect that to kind of drop back. So if the Jets want to stay right where the top six is, they're going to need to keep generating more and more chances to try to make sure that when the shooting percentage dries up a little bit, they're getting enough chances and they can pile on those goals still. If that dries up and they keep playing slow, the record could go south really quickly, and that could get ugly in Winnipeg very fast too.
Sean, I wanted to ask you about something that, you know, isn't talked about a lot lately, and I know that you follow advanced stats just as much as anyone. When you talk about goalies and an advanced stat that really tells you how a goalie's performing, do you like even strength save percentage? Is that the metric that you still like?
No. Goalie stats are voodoo, and if you hang around Twitter long enough, you'll come across hashtag voodoo really quick. Goalie stats are kind of a place where we haven't made as many gains as we have in other places. The one that I like the best, the one that I turn to, is goals saved above average. And that's where we look at what kind of shots are the goalies facing, low danger, medium danger, high danger shots. How many of each are they facing? And are they saving more or less of those than a league average goalie would? And so I would recommend for listeners, if you're looking for the stat that seems to be the most telling, it's GSAA, goal saved above average. And that's one that I track on the website that I have with my charts as well. So you can sort of keep an eye on how goalies are faring versus the league average goalie so far. Goalie stats remain a little bit voodoo, and it's a little bit hard to nail down in the way that we have with forwards and defensemen what a real quality goaltender looks like.
Sean, just quickly, the Vegas Golden Knights, the story of the season, 7-1 start, but they ranked 29th out of 31 teams in 5-on-5 Corsi. I'm just, from your opinion, do you think regression is on its way to Sin City, or can they maintain this positive play?
Yeah, I hate to rain on the parade. I was one of those guys in the summer that was saying this could be a fun team to cheer for, and I've always had a soft spot for expansion teams when they've come along, but it's going to run out. They're not generating nearly enough chances. They're really overperforming what their underlying numbers suggest they should be doing. And I mean, it's no surprise with how well they've done. It's the hottest start in the history of expansion teams, right? So it's going to dry up. It's not always going to be so rosy in Vegas, but I think, you know, as fans of the NHL, it's nice that when a new team showed up, I don't think anybody was hoping that they'd just get kicked around the ice all season long. And instead, it's been quite the opposite, that they've looked competitive. They've gained some confidence and, they've been fun to watch so far. But yeah, as the season goes on, if the numbers stay the way they are underlying the one wins and loss record, it is going to dry up and the story will end. But it's sure been fun while it's lasted.
Sean Tierney covers the NHL for theathletic.com and Hockey Graphs. You can follow him on Twitter at Charting Hockey. Sean, we'll do this again later on in the year and keep track of how the Jets are performing. I really appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Our pleasure, Sean. Take care. When we come back, we touch base with the TSN Insiders, the latest edition of Insider Trading, and we'll do an out-of-town scoreboard update. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Sean Tierney for joining us. Some great insight into sort of the analytical point of view and as it pertains to your Winnipeg Jets. Basically, in short, he's not confident the Jets are going to be able to keep up this above 500 record of 4-3 unless the deployment of the Winnipeg Jets changes in the near future. But you can follow Sean at Charting Hockey for more information. And of course, in case you missed any of that segment or want to hear it again, just subscribe to the podcast. You can get it on illegalcurve.com. You can get it on tsn1290.ca. And you can, again, subscribe and get it sent to you each and every week. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. The boys at Insider Trading, you know who the insiders are. They got together for another session. Here's what they had to report on.
Very injury-focused edition of Insider Trading with your insiders, Darren Drager and Pierre Lebrun. The Panthers pick up Antti Niemi off waivers. Does that indicate real concern about the injury to Roberto Luongo?
Well, what it really indicates, James, is that they don't quite know yet what they're dealing with in terms of how long Roberto Luongo will be out. So, yeah, there is some concern because of that. Now, they should know at some point next week or have a clearer picture as to what it means for the upper body injury to Roberto Luongo and how long he'll be out. In the meantime, obviously, James Reimer is more than a capable backup, but they wanted insurance for him as well as a backup, and that's why Miami is a Panther.
Another big name down in Minnesota where Zach Parise is out 8 to 10 weeks after back surgery. How do the Wild respond to this?
Internally for now, I mean, they don't plan on going out and trying to replace Zach Parise. First of all, he will be back in 8 to 10 weeks. They have other injuries as well. The Wild have been ravaged. But the interesting part here with Zach Parise was that he basically made the decision to have surgery, and he talked to other people who went through this surgery, notably Mack Green, the former LA King, who also had this surgery, because the decision could have been to try to keep working through it and rehab and hope that it feels better, but in the end, after having a setback recently, they decided to have surgery. Probably the right decision.
New Jersey Devil Brian Boyle, of course, being treated for chronic myelogenous leukemia. How is Brian doing?
He's doing well. Number one, he's healthy. I mean, that's first and foremost to the New Jersey Devils and to Brian Boyle. He missed training camp. He missed the preseason. So he's just glad to be back in the National Hockey League around his teammates. He's skating again with the New Jersey Devils. So he's getting to know that group a little bit. But neither Boyle nor the Devils as an organization are putting any timeline or pressure on when he should jump back in the game. He needs to feel 100% ready. I mean, again, he's trying to make an impression on the organization, loves the support that he's received, but he'll return to the NHL when he's 100% good to go.
The Edmonton Oilers are hoping it's an earlier than expected timeline for Andre Sekera, one of their key defensemen. He went under the knife in May for a torn ACL. Now, the recovery at the time was announced as 6 to 9 months. Well, they're hopeful that perhaps he might be back in late November, early December, which would be in the 6 month range. So, obviously, there could be setbacks, but at this juncture, the early word is that he might be back in the earlier part of that.
There's certainly been some concern in Edmonton with the start they've had, but higher levels, I won't say panic yet, but it's getting near there in Montreal and New York with the starts of the Canadiens and the Rangers. Are there going to be quick moves?
It doesn't sound like it. I mean, both clubs really don't have much of a choice but to remain patient, even though the faithful, their fan base, is anything but that. It's also hard to imagine the goaltending woes that both these clubs are suffering when you look at Henrik Lundqvist of the New York Rangers, Carey Price of the Montreal Canadiens. Plus, neither club is scoring with any level of consistency. However, it is early in the season, so you have to be patient. They really don't have a choice. And both general managers in Montreal and in New York are saying, look, let's just give our group a bit of time here for the players to get back into a run. And if they can't, then we'll have to step in a little bit later in the season, but nothing imminent.
You're right. It is early and it's mandatory we say that. But if you get stuck on one or two wins for a couple more weeks, it can get late really quickly.
One or two wins, that's what the Arizona Coyotes would wish for. I know they didn't discuss them in Insider Trading today. That was about the Rangers and the Habs. But the worth noting that the Coyotes are still looking for their first victory on the season, which is incredible to say. The Habs, they feel better about themselves. They beat the Panthers last night. Rangers continue their struggles, so it'll be interesting to see when those two teams break out of it. Actually, the Coyotes play at the Rangers tomorrow night, so that's a prime opportunity for one of those two teams to get off the schneid a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, by the way, it's good to see that Brian Boyle is back at practice, and, you know, he's scheduled to come back in the near future. That's always great to see.
Absolutely.
You know, starting off with the goaltending, I mean, unfortunately, James Reimer, the pride of Morwena, Manitoba, was absolutely lit up yesterday for 5 goals, as you mentioned, against the Canadiens. I mean, this is a serious concern for the Florida Panthers. They've been struggling early on this season. Right now, Finnish goaltender Harry Sateri is backing up James Reimer, and, you know, Antti Niemi, you know, speaking of goaltenders that have had rough starts to the season.
Now, Sateri's only there until Niemi sort of gets to Florida
after
being claimed off waivers.
Absolutely.
And everything.
But when you're talking about, you know, this goalie situation, Roberto Luongo, he injured his hand last week against the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're calling it an upper body injury, but we know it's related to his hand. And you hope that Roberto Luongo is not going to be out for any extended period of time. And then you have to decide, well, what are you going to do once Roberto Luongo comes back? Are you going to now place Antti Niemi on waivers again? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if they do that, because then you're probably looking at a situation where you don't want to carry three goalies, right? So, and you know that Niemi most likely will clear waivers. Unfortunately, you know, it looks like his career is, you know, continuing to go on that downward trajectory, well,
I mean, his numbers in Pittsburgh this year, and we talked about with Sam Werner back in hour number one, I mean, his numbers are, you thought Steve Mason's numbers were bad. Antti Niemi's numbers are horrendous.
Right, and he's only played a few games. I think he's only got into a couple games, three games maybe. But when you're talking about Niemi, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, not too long ago won the Stanley Cup with the Chicago Blackhawks, right?
Sure.
So last year he had a terrible year with the Dallas Stars, kind of splitting time with Kari Lehtinen, and that's why he didn't return to the Stars, and Pittsburgh kind of acquired him as insurance for Marc-Andre Fleury. But I mean, this is a big problem for Florida. So obviously you hope that Antti Niemi is able to turn it around. His numbers aren't going to stay that bad. But I think right now, Drew, Niemi is just an insurance policy for Luongo.
I think if you're the Panthers, you're probably running Reimer into the net every single game at this point in time. You can't have any confidence in Niemi or Harry Sateri, who's yet to play in an NHL game and has only got a few games at the AHL level. In Minnesota, though, the Zach Parise news has gone from bad to worse. We know that he was close to returning to the lineup allegedly last week. A lot of people thought he was going to make his NHL debut against the Jets last Friday. Then in a practice, he felt something go wrong with his back. Boom, surgery, 8 to 10 weeks. Hard to believe that even 8 to 10 weeks from now, that Zach Parise is going to return anywhere near 100%. This is a guy who's had back problems before. A couple years ago, he had serious back problems for the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, well, he didn't play a full year last year, and he hasn't played a full year in quite some time. He's a guy that's had a lot of injury problems. We were talking about it on Saturday's show, and we were talking about Parise possibly being out for a week or 2 weeks. Now, as you mentioned, it's looking like it's going to be more like 8 to 10 weeks, right? So this is terrible news, guys, and I wouldn't expect the Minnesota Wild to make any moves. Obviously, there are some salary cap issues there, but you're going to see guys like Joel Eriksson-Ek and Luke Cunnan get just more opportunities, right? Joel Eriksson-Ek was a guy that they kind of had slotted in as their third line center. He's been on the top line for the Minnesota Wild on the wing. So you're going to continue to see guys like Landon Ferraro get opportunities with the Minnesota Wild. But I mean, this is terrible news because you've already got Charlie Coyle out long term, Nino Niederreiter's out of the lineup. Mikael Granlund is now expected to be back in the lineup. So they're starting to get a little bit healthier. Marcus Foligno's back. But Zach Parise, it's just terrible news for him. I mean, this is a top left winger in the NHL, right? And he's going to be out for the next 2 months. So I really feel for Chuck Fletcher and Bruce Boudreau and more importantly, Zach Parise, because he just can't seem to play a full season in the NHL. And, you know, you wonder at his age, he's 33 years old now, and you wonder if this is going to be, you know, a long-term thing for him.
Rarely does a 33-year-old with a bad back get much better than, you know, than a bad back forever.
I mean, and, you know, with the proper treatment, and we know that NHL players get the best treatment. They get a lot better treatment than a schmuck like me gets, Drew. So, I mean, you hope that he's able to play. You hope that he's able to play through it, right? And you know how big of a fan I am of Zach Parise, and you know I'm supposed to say Parise, not Parise, but I always say Parise because that's what they call JP, his dad. So I just hope that he's able to come back and make a full recovery because he's a hell of a hockey player.
Can we videotape the acupuncture session that you're going for tomorrow to deal with your back?
I don't think anyone wants to see that, but sure.
I don't know.
Let's strap a GoPro on you.
You as a pincushion might make for some interesting, you know, faces of death kind of video sort of thing.
Old pickle chips pincushion.
There you go. When we come back, Frank Provenzano, former assistant general manager in the NHL, joins us. You're listening to the NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Wednesday evening. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your texts to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
You can read his work at theathletic.com. He's a former assistant general manager for both the Dallas Stars and the Washington Capitals. Good friend of ours, Frank Provenzano, joins us now on the program. Frank, good evening, and how are you?
Good, you forgot extremely good looking.
It went without saying, is what I you know, stand up comedian and extremely good looking, right?
Yeah.
Frank, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this evening. You know, I wanted to talk to you about, sort of go around the league, and you know, as a former AGM, you have such great insight into the league. The bridge contract, which was sort of what the NHL wanted to create after the last lockout, has clearly been decimated with all the contract signings we've seen as people come out of their entry-level deal. You know, the superstars and even some of the average players are getting multi-year, long-term deals, 6, 7, 8 years out of their entry-level deal. Are you at all surprised that the sort of bridge contract, that second supposedly less expensive contract, has gone by the wayside so quickly?
I am. I mean, I understand why. As you alluded to, you know, the league has trended younger and faster, and those two things go hand in hand over the last couple of years, and it seems to have really accelerated over the last 2-3 years. And, you know, you're also seeing, in my opinion, and Winnipeg's a great example of this, players come in out of their draft year or 1 year out of their draft year and not just make the NHL roster, but, you know, play in the top groupings, in your top six, your top four, and make a real impact. And, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think the young players that are being drafted today, you know, back not too long ago, you'd draft a player, you'd have your development camp, and they were seeing some of these NHL-style training techniques and drills for the first time at your development camp. You're drafting these players now, they're coming to development camp, they've been doing this stuff for 10 years, you know, since they were 14 years old or 12 years old even. So I think the players that are being drafted now, the young players that are being drafted now, are much more NHL-ready, especially the elite players. And it has resulted in sort of a move towards teams wanting to quote unquote lock up their good young players. There's always an over, maybe an over rationalized or an irrational fear of offer sheets, I think sometimes, in my opinion as well, because everyone's been near the cap and you have a flat cap as well. So there's not necessarily the growth in the cap to accommodate, for maybe uncertainty in whether or not you'll be able to get your young player signed. So I think you've got a lot of different things that have resulted in these young players now getting a lot of money and a lot of term very early. Having said that, I think it has led to maybe teams paying a premium earlier on in the contract life cycle than perhaps they should.
You know, Frank, sticking with young players, earlier this week up on The Athletic, you had an article called What Makes for a Good NHL Contract, and specifically how it rates to the Detroit, pardon me, how it relates to the Detroit Red Wings forward Dylan Larkin. In your opinion, what is a good NHL contract, and should the Wings maybe consider signing Dylan Larkin to 5 or 6 years as opposed to maybe 7 or 8?
Well, I think, you know, I asked that question in that article somewhat rhetorically because I think the notion of what is a quote-unquote, air-quote, good contract has also changed. And, you know, I referenced the time when I started way back when in the league and I looked at a good contract with one, you know, this is without a salary cap, where you got the player for the cheapest amount possible. And I learned over time as I sort of grew in the role and that if you're going to have core players with you that you either, you know, draft or trade for or young, where they're going to be with you over multiple contracts, a good contract really is one that really shares the risk equitably between the player and the club over the performance horizon of the term. And what I mean by that is, you know, for a young player, for example, you know, look at Winnipeg. They've recently extended Ehlers and last year extended Scheifele. You may pay a bit of a premium up front based on performance that the player is not yet there at, and then he sort of grows into the cost of that contract performance-wise over time. And then at the tail end, if you're not buying out free agency, the club is either getting market rate or, in an ideal world, even slightly below market. And that's really sharing the risk of everyone involved. The risk with some of these teams
sort of maybe a bad contract, if you will, is when a team just pays, you know, maybe too much money to a young player and sort of pays market rate right out of the bat, right out of the gate at the top end of where that player is going to be. And I use, you know, and some people may think it's a strange example of this, Jack Eichel in Buffalo, you know, who's widely seen as being a top, top young player in the game. But in my mind, to give him $10 million with some of the, you know, questions, legitimate or not, about maybe maturity or professional maturity and based on where he's at performance-wise, they may have just paid him what he's maximally worth, and therefore the team is assuming all the risk over the term of that contract. So that is a bad contract in the sense of that risk-cost, performance-risk-cost ratio that I use to sort of determine what that means, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Frank, I'm curious, back to Detroit, I'm wondering how you thought the Red Wings handled the signing of Andreas Athanasiou.
I thought they handled that one well, and I think, you know, if you look at Detroit's sort of old model that they use, quote-unquote old model that they used for, you know, 22 years, I think last summer they drafted ninth. It was the first time they had drafted in the top 10, I believe, since they drafted Marty Lapointe in 1995. So that is one crazy run of excellence. But, you know, I think the old model, quote-unquote, that they used was they weren't drafting high. They got, you know, either really good or really lucky or both by, at the end of the Yzerman years, picking up Zetterberg and Datsyuk when they did. And they rode good players, you know, Nick Lidstrom as well, for a long time there. Really used the CBA leverage on restricted free agents and then paid premiums to keep guys in Detroit while they were in their Stanley Cup window, which was a really extended window. I think nowadays that model doesn't work as well when you're in your window because the tail end, the sunset years, if you look at a performance life cycle or a contract life cycle, there's the entry level, there's the performance contract, which may be one or two. You may have a bridge to get there, and then there's a sunset contract. That sunset contract used to start maybe, you know, from 32 to 36, 37. I think now that sunset starts like 30 years old. And so you really can't be paying premiums, in my opinion, for guys much past the age of 30 now because you're going to have dead money tied up in those contracts. And I think that's the criticism in the Detroit market of Kenny Holland. It seems to be that he's handcuffed that franchise with a lot of contracts for older players with, you know, with a lot of dead money in, and hasn't given himself any room to sign some of these young players that they're now getting, like the Dylan Larkins of the world.
Frank Provenzano is our guest on NHL This Week. Frank is with TheAthletic.com. He's also a former NHL assistant general manager and quite handsome and a stand-up comedian. Frank, you know, you talk about
improv.
Improv
comedian.
Improv comedian.
Yes.
Oh, pardon me. I you know, want to be 100% accurate, so my apologies there. You know, Frank, you talk about in an article on TheAthletic.com Brent Seabrook and how the Blackhawks might regret that contract in the next few years. He was signed, of course, to the big contract extension just a couple summers ago. Why do you think that the Blackhawks might regret that Seabrook contract? I mean, you hear the name Brent Seabrook, you think top flight, top pairing NHL defenseman. Why do you have caution about that contract?
Because by definition, contracts are for future performance. And a lot of what goes into signing a player is past performance. I mean, I used to look at contracts, the value of contracts, as almost like the value of a stock. And you have a price, and you have an underlying value. And the price, and sometimes those match up and sometimes they don't. The underlying value of the stock is based on, you know, the earning potential of the stock going forward. The underlying value of a player is based on the performance that you're going to get out of them. Unfortunately, sometimes you have to pay, not unfortunately, but just the reality is you have to pay. The cost of that player is tied up in what he has already done in the league, obviously. And sometimes you have to make a determination that that line is going to sort of, those two lines, that value cost line, they're going to intersect and start traveling in ways that aren't friendly to the club. And when they do that, the rule I always use was get rid of a player 1 year too early instead of 1 year too late. And when you start falling in love with players, and it's easy to do when you've won three cups in 5 years, that's when you start, in my opinion, to run into problems where you have players or assets that are underperforming that then become drags on what you're trying to do. I mean, you know, they signed out of their Stanley Cup run, names escaping me now, Bickle.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a big playoff. They signed him to that contract, and then he never really returned to that performance level. And in some ways, I believe that cost them Brandon Saad. Now he's back. But they've had to pair a lot of young players out of there. And they've done a masterful job at it, by the way, because they've really, you know, they've kept a core group together there, moved a lot of players out of there, and still were, you know, winning cups and could even win another one this year. But I think they're at the end of that, they're getting towards the end of that window just because that's the way it goes. And when you make a couple of those mistakes, they really start to pile up. And I think going forward, that one might be a mistake.
Frank, what do you make of the Vegas Golden Knights 7-1 start to the season and the job that George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon have done building that team?
Well, I think two things. One, I think they had, I think they did a great job, obviously. They were able to manipulate they almost had their own private trade deadline. Not almost, they really did have their own private trade deadline going into the expansion draft, and then really it bled into the draft in some ways. And that is unprecedented. So they had rules that were a little more favorable to them than other expansion teams have had, which, by the way, they should. It's in the NHL's best interest when you charge $500 million and stick a team in the middle of the Nevada desert to make it somewhat competitive, because I don't know if you guys have been to Vegas lately, but there's other entertainment options there. So I think they've done a great job. I also think that, you know, some of that is the fact that it's such a new thing for those players and it's a new start. There will be, to use a, you know, a stat head term, I think there will be regression there. And if there isn't regression, I think they're, you know, it just puts the Vegas management team in a position to really be players at the trade deadline, because I don't really think in their plan they even want to make the playoffs this year. I think, you know, their goal is probably to draft in the top 10 again, realistically, because they're not a Stanley Cup contending team. And a lot of the players that are there even generating this early success aren't going to be long-term players for them anyway. But a pretty cool story, and one that I think, you know, is good for a lot of reasons, good for the league and good for Las Vegas, especially considering what happened there a couple weekends ago.
Frank, quickly, I would just love to get your take on the whole Matt Duchene situation in Colorado. You know, it's no secret that he wants out and he's requested a trade, and there's the whole inability to move him over the summer, and now he's playing very well for the team. He's leading the team in points. Colorado is tied for third in the Central. Does him playing well, like, does it hinder his ability to be traded? Like, is management hesitant to trade him now because he's being productive for the team, or does he increase his trade value by playing well? I'm just curious as to a management's perspective on that.
I think it does both. I think it certainly increases his trade value. I mean, it's always easier to sell high, you know, than sell low. But then it might give you pause because, you know, you're starting to get performance out of the player that maybe you're not as mad at the player as you were when the relationship started to go south. I still think that, you know, there's a lot of times where a player will request to be traded, and I always look at those trade requests as written in pencil. I mean, you know, look at Trouba's situation last year, you know. Like, a lot of times the player will request a trade through his agent. And, you know, I have two kids, and they request a lot of things at Christmas time from Santa. And they don't get everything they want. And, you know, at the end of the day, they're still pretty happy, as far as I know, being children of mine. And I think in some ways it's the same thing. You know, relationships mend over time. Sometimes the situations that were leading to a trade demand, not just from management's standpoint in terms of their willingness to trade the player, but from the player's standpoint where he's like, you know what, maybe it's not so bad here, maybe I'll stick it out. So I think Colorado is an interesting case. I mean, that Central Division is crazy. Every team in there, you can make an argument, is a playoff team. Even as bad as Colorado was bad last year, and they were putrid, they were a bad, talented team, which makes them dangerous.
Frank Provenzano is with TheAthletic.com. He's a former assistant general manager. He's devilishly handsome. Frank, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us on NHL This Week.
Thanks a lot, Frank.
Bye.
When we come back, one final segment. We'll wrap the show. We'll get you set for tomorrow in Pittsburgh and Friday in Columbus. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Final segment Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290. A reminder, of course, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning, bright and early, 9 a.m. here on TSN 1290. We'll look back at the Jets and the Blue Jackets and the Jets and the Penguins tomorrow night. Jets and Blue Jackets Friday night, of course. Get you set for the rematch between the Jets and the Penguins on Sunday. We won't be on before Halloween, so what are you going as for Halloween this year, as?
I don't dress up.
Not anymore?
I'm 35 years old.
I've seen you in your desires for candy, so, you know. No, you're not going out trick-or-treating or anything?
Halloween is for kids.
Okay. Do you do anything at work? You know, some workplaces encourage their employees to dress up, or they have a fun theme day or that sort of thing.
Yeah, we've done that at work, and usually I just, you know, pull something out of the closet, like a hat or a funny shirt or something, but I'm not big into dressing up. I know that Sean Asor is, so he's probably got a few costumes lined up.
Sean, you got big Halloween plans for this coming Tuesday? The Jets in the Wild, of course, Tuesday night. And so the Jets are playing on a Halloween in Minnesota this year.
Yeah, I have a housewarming party over the weekend.
And is it a costume?
Yeah, costume themed. I've got to think of a costume.
Yeah, so you don't know what you're going as yet?
No, but I'll find something, and the creative juices will flow. And
you should go as Rick Ralph.
Rick Ralph?
That would be a good costume, I suppose. I'm not sure how you would.
I would just talk about my pillow for the entire evening.
Yeah, yeah. Just put on like
just a
just walk around with a pillow.
Wear jeans, a button up shirt, and have a my pillow. There's your costume. Well, no, actually, now that I think about it, that's what I might go as.
Well, you did go as Lawless one year.
Yeah,
and so you know, you he just went as, he carried a newspaper around underneath his arm and
a bowl of spaghetti.
And changed your didn't you change your name tag to Gary Lawless?
Yeah.
That was always a clever costume.
I basically just made sure that I didn't have any hair and walked around and looked important.
There you go. Excellent.
Look, just kidding, lawman.
Zing!
We love you.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's not listening in Vegas right tonight.
He's probably on the strip.
On the Vegas strip.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, you live the good life in Vegas. You might as well. Can't go wrong at that point in time. Anyways, Jets and the Blue Jackets tomorrow night. Jets and the Penguins tomorrow night. Jets and the Blue Jackets.
Come on, Drew.
On
that's
Friday
night.
Yeah, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. I'm excited. They're finally back to playing hockey. It's been a tough sort of 6 days.
Yeah, I don't like this. I don't know if you guys heard Patrick Laine. I know that Sean heard Patrick Laine saying earlier this week, I think it was Tuesday,
yeah, he doesn't
which
like
was
it.
Yesterday.
Too much practice.
Yeah, and why would he? I mean, the season is now 7 games deep.
Yeah,
it's and like training I camp think these guys want to play.
Oh, I'm sure that they do. I don't blame him. I'd want to play too. Practice is important, but you know, you haven't played since Friday. They were off Saturday, so they've practiced, what, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday,
Wednesday?
Well,
the Jets had their Halloween party on Saturday.
They had 3 days of practice this week also.
Yeah.
And see Patrick Laine's costume?
Oh, did they actually have their Halloween party?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you haven't seen it?
No, I missed it.
Oh, it's amazing.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing.
This is on Instagram or something?
Yeah, his Instagram.
Okay. I didn't even know Patrick had an Instagram, so clearly I'm out of the loop when it comes to the Jets and their Instagram accounts, but
My favorite part about Halloween is, sorry to interrupt you, the day after Halloween, because all the candy goes on sale.
Yeah, you're going to pack it in there?
I have zero willpower when it comes to candy.
Really?
Oh.
You're not, I mean, you're a pretty fit guy. You don't seem like
a big
guy. Well, I mean, relatively speaking, in this group of three, you're definitely the most fit out of all of us, which is, you know, damning with faint praise.
Well, Sean actually exercises regularly. That's the difference between him and us.
Yeah, so, you know, exercising regularly is certainly something that falls by the wayside often. I haven't even seen him eat one of the Timbits that's on the table.
Oh, I've been eyeing them down. Don't worry.
Okay, there you go. That's dinner for afterwards. But, you know, so apparently Sean and willpower and candy, that's his weakness.
Coffee crisp is my weakness.
It's funny. That's my my favorite chocolate bar
it's
as well.
It's a great bar.
Yeah. You can't get coffee crisp in the U.S.
I know you can't. It's you know, it's a Canadian thing.
Yeah.
Just like Smarties are British.
My roommate's cousin makes him bring him a pack of coffee crisp every time he goes south of the border to visit him.
Really? Mm-hmm. There's no laws or anything about importing. You know, the
if
whole
anyone's going to sneak some chocolate bars across the border, it's my roommate.
Okay. There's no NAFTA negotiations regarding coffee crisp or anything at this point in time?
Why do you only see rocket candy around Halloween? Like, you never see anybody eating rocket candy unless it's Halloween.
I haven't seen anybody over the age of 12 eat rocket candy because it's just
candy.
Sugar.
Oh, I love it.
I mean, at least the chocolate bar has other ingredients besides sugar and whatever else. But those rocket candies are just hardened sugar.
It's wonderful.
You really do have a soft spot
sweets.
For this.
Drew, aren't you going to be serving avocado bread at your house?
Avocado toast, Ezzy. Be perfectly accurate.
Well, it's still avocado bread.
Yeah, but it's not bread. It has to be toasted. It's bread, yes, so toast is bread, correct, but if somebody came to your door and you serve them avocado on piece of white bread that's not toasted, you'd be thrown out of the hipster crowd.
No one's Instagramming avocado bread, but everyone Instagrams avocado on toast.
Well, Sean, we'll tell the kids to go to Drew's house for broccoli and celery.
Broccoli, ants on a log, now you're talking, with a little bit of peanut butter and
some raisins,
that's an old classic from your kids' days.
That's a delicious snack.
Exactly. And it's healthy with the celery and everything else because, celery is, I'm sure, one of the better vegetables. I have no idea.
You better get some hockey in here because...
We are. We're talking about the Jets and the Penguins at the same time. We were talking about the Jets' Halloween party before. So do you have a key for tomorrow night's game against the Penguins? You're stepping up in weight class. Last time the Jets faced against a Stanley Cup contender, the Blue Jackets ran him out of the building. That was last week. So how did the Jets prevent that from happening again?
Well, it's kind of the same key for this team when they've been successful for me. It's you got to play with speed and you got to play with pressure, right? And we know that the Pittsburgh Penguins are struggling defensively. We talked about it last hour. They're averaging 4 goals against per game, and we expect Matt Murray to be in net tomorrow night for the Pittsburgh Penguins. But for the Jets, it's got to be a full 60-minute effort. As far as I'm concerned, the only game this year that the Jets have played 3 solid periods is the game against Edmonton. So they have to take the positive from the game against the Minnesota Wild and bring that tomorrow night versus the Penguins.
Yeah, some interesting circumstances for both teams. Pittsburgh coming off a big win over Edmonton, so playing with a lot of speed and a lot of defensive structure. Coming off before that, a really tough loss to Tampa Bay. Jets coming off a close to a 6-day break. So it's good. The start of the game for me is going to be really interesting. Can the Jets match the speed and intensity?
That's it for this Wednesday evening here on NHL This Week. This segment brought our big thanks to all our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support those fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big thank you to our guests, Frank Provenzano, Sean Tierney, and Sam Werner. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on illegalcurve.com, on tsn1290.ca, and of course, subscribe to the show. Get it sent to your device each and every week. For Sean Assor, doing a great job producing the show as well. For Old Pickle Chips Ginsburg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.